Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Still to this very day, Jewish people do not think of a Messiah who suffers or is afflicted. They are thinking of the same Messiah they were thinking about when Jesus came and flipped everything on its head. But the Messiah will come in glory, but what nobody saw was that he would come first in this path of suffering and affliction.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study through the books of the Old Testament prophets. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on Zechariah chapters 9 through 10. Now here's Pastor Brian.
There was a brief season where Jews thought Martin Luther might be the Messiah. Not Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther, the reformer in Germany in the 1500s. And the reason they thought he might be the Messiah is because they were living under a lot of persecution that was coming through the Roman Catholic Church. And Luther came and he was seeking to reform the church and revolted against the church and was cast out of the church. And because Luther was a Bible guy, he started having more of a sympathetic kind of a perspective on the Jews. And he sought to win them over. He thought, now that we have the true faith back, the Jews are going to respond. They're going to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. So this is a very short-lived thing because the Jews did not believe that, and Luther actually turned against them instead of for them. But for that brief period of time, there is talk in the literature of the time that perhaps Luther was that long-awaited messianic hope, or maybe he was Elijah who would come before the Messiah. So, interesting. But here in the passage, we have the prophecy of the true Messiah. So, behold, your king is coming to you. He is just or righteous, could be translated either way, and having salvation, or literally it could just simply be he is righteous and he is the Savior. So it could just as easily read that way. But he is just, so he's coming as a just king, and he's bringing salvation. He's bringing deliverance. And this, of course, is what the Jews expected, but what they didn't expect is what it says next. They didn't expect this. It says, lowly and riding on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. Now, in the history of the nation, so horses were not really majorly a part of Jewish Israeli life and experience until after the time of Solomon. Solomon really introduced the horse to the nation. And prior to that, it was mules, it was donkeys. And so we read about Solomon as in his sort of his inauguration that he is placed upon David's mule, and he's introduced to the people as the king on the back of a mule. But then, like I said, once Solomon comes, Solomon introduces the horse, and the horse becomes the symbol of power. And of course, horses were seen and still are to some degree as animals of war. They're fearless and charging into battle and so forth. So, you know, when you think of your king coming, you're thinking that he's coming on a stallion, right? That, and by the time Jesus comes into the world, that's exactly what the expectation was. Because this great and oppressive power called Rome had the Jewish people under their thumb for a long, long time now. And so they're looking for a king that's going to overthrow the Romans. But now, this is the picture. Your king is coming to you. He's coming and he's riding not on a stallion, but he's riding on the colt of a donkey. And the specifics here are that the king is riding on an animal that has never been ridden before. And it's a colt. Now, you know, a colt is a not a baby, but it's a maturing animal. It's not a full-grown animal, in other words. But here's the important, more important, is the word lowly. And the interesting thing that I discovered, I did not really know this, but the word lowly is an okay translation, but it's not really the best translation. And it doesn't really express what it is that's being communicated. The better way to express this Hebrew word is afflicted. He is coming to you and he is afflicted. The other word is that he would be poor. The idea that he would suffer. All of these are wrapped up in this word that is translated into English here as lowly. And now here's something to think about. So Zechariah, he's writing roughly 200 plus years after Isaiah wrote. And those of you who know your Bible, you know the most famous passage in Isaiah is Isaiah 53, right? And Isaiah 53 is about what? It's about the suffering servant. The one who is wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, the one who is afflicted. Here's the point. What Zechariah is describing here is what Isaiah was talking about. In this one word, he's hinting at the fact that the Messiah will suffer. So, like I said, it's more than just being lowly or humble. It's that, but it's deeper than that, and it's more tied into the messianic picture that was given. Now, just to remind you that the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, which is the prophecy of the suffering of the Messiah, and if you haven't read it in a while, read it tonight when you go home. You'll be astounded again by it. If you've never read it, read it tonight, and you'll be astounded by it. Because it's clear you're reading about Jesus, but it's 700 years before he's born. But as we understand that to be messianic, and even some of the ancient rabbis considered that to be messianic, most Jews historically have not, and Jews today do not believe that that is a messianic portion. So still to this very day, Jewish people do not think of a Messiah who suffers or is afflicted. They are thinking of the same Messiah they were thinking about when Jesus came and flipped everything on its head. They were thinking about the Bar Kokhba. They're still thinking about the Bar Kokhba type of a Messiah. But the Messiah will come in glory. But what nobody saw was that he would come first in this path of suffering and affliction. And those of you who have been studying with us for some time, you know that the prophets didn't necessarily understand that there were two comings of the Messiah, that this was hidden from them. And that's why oftentimes both things are included just as they are right here. We're going to see in just a second that this goes from what we know took place on what we commonly call Palm Sunday, Jesus riding into Jerusalem. But this prophecy itself now is going to extend out to the reign of the Messiah over the whole world. And so look what it says. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim, the horse from Jerusalem, the battle bow shall be cut off. So Ephraim, they're the people of God. Judah's the people of God. What's being said here is they're not going to need weapons anymore. When this king comes to them, they will no longer need weapons. And then listen to what it says. It says, he shall speak peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. So you see both things blended into one. Behold, your king is coming to you. He's coming lowly upon a donkey, and he shall speak peace to the nations. His dominion shall be from sea to sea. That second part hasn't happened yet, has it? But this is how the prophecy so often worked. They did not see the time gap. They did not recognize or understand that there would be two comings. Even the very apostles, when we come to the New Testament, they don't understand that there is to be a humiliation of the Messiah. They certainly don't understand there's to be a death of the Messiah. They do not have any idea that there's to be a resurrection, and they have no idea that the kingdom is not going to be immediately set up. They think that that's all going to happen. And can you imagine now, they would have, the people who were there on that first Palm Sunday, they would have known that what was happening was a fulfillment of prophecy, because they had Zechariah. They read it for centuries. So when this is all happening, this prophecy is unfolding right before their very eyes. And remember, on that day, there are so many different things that are happening. The children are crying out, and they're saying, "Save now, Son of David." They're quoting the Messianic Psalm, Psalm 118. And the religious leaders are saying, "You tell them to stop saying that." Because the religious leaders got what was going on. They said to Jesus, "Silence them." And Jesus said, "If they were to be quiet, the very stones would cry out." There's nothing you can do about this day. This is the day that the Lord has made. This is that day. This is that appointed day. And so Jesus arrives just as it was prophesied. And it's all happening there, but it takes a turn in a direction that no one anticipates, and that's the things that we already talked about. But let's just remember this, and this is what I was saying earlier about prophecy. Let's just remember that as surely as the first portion of the prophecy was fulfilled literally, exactly as it was written, the second portion of the prophecy will be fulfilled as well. So just as certainly as Jesus on whatever the date might have been, some say April 6, 32 AD, could have been that date, somewhere around there, maybe a year or two difference, we don't know exactly. But as sure as Jesus rode into Jerusalem on that day and was hailed as the king in fulfillment of Zechariah, as sure as that happened, it will also be that he shall speak peace to the nations, and his dominion shall be from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. The Lord is going to come back, and he's going to set up his kingdom. And you know, it's really fascinating if you kind of just take a step back and look at the world that we live in, And look at all of the, you know, just literally the insanity that is around us these days. And you see how it's not merely political. It's not merely ideological or philosophical. It's really spiritual. There's spiritual things are at the root of all of this that is happening. And the one thing that I always think about and always just sort of marvels me is how Jesus is, the biblical Jesus, the Jesus of Scripture, is always completely on the outs with all of the nations, no matter what nation it is. Even in a nation that would say, well, yeah, we're Christian. Well, really? Well, we're Christian, but we don't like what Jesus said about that. So, you know, we will invent a Christianity that is disconnected from the person and the teaching of Jesus. We will say we are Christian, but we will dishonor the one who Christianity stems from. And as we said it before, there are plenty of people all around the world who desire in their own version of the things that the kingdom promises, their own version, meaning that they want the blessings of the kingdom, but they don't want the king to rule or to implement those blessings. That's the world we live in. You know, we live in a world of ideology now. All these ideologies divided up. And what are all of the ideologies at the root? What are they all promising? They're all promising the ideal world. If you implement our philosophy, the world will be the perfect place that we know it can be. But there's all kinds of competing ideas about what is going to bring about the ideal world. But that's the point. The objective is to attain the ideal world. It's to attain the kingdom. But nobody wants the king over the kingdom. So Jesus, you know, he's on the outs. He's on the outs with the man on the street, and he's on the outs with the man in the White House. And he's on the outs with, you know, the man in the factory, and he's on the outs with the man in the university. You know, Jesus is on the outs, always. But that's okay, because he is the king. And one day, he will make that clear. So, as for you also, because of the blood of your covenant, I will set, we're in verse 11 here, I will set your prisoners free from the waterless pit. Return to the stronghold, you prisoners of hope. Even today, I declare that I will restore double to you. So these are promises to the people of Israel for the future. For I have bent Judah, my bow, fitted the bow with Ephraim. So Ephraim is just another name for the northern kingdom. So remember, originally there's one nation of Israel, and that comes to kind of a climactic moment under David. And then David passes the kingdom unto Solomon. But then at the end of the reign of Solomon, the kingdom splits in two, and it becomes the northern and the southern kingdom, or Joseph and Judah, or Ephraim. Ephraim is a son of Joseph, so sometimes the northern tribes, there's 11 tribes in the north, they are identified as Ephraim. So that's why the reference here is to both Judah and Ephraim. It's talking about the whole of the country. And raised up your sons, O Zion, against your sons, O Greece, and made you like the sword of a mighty man. So remember I mentioned Alexander the Great earlier. Here's a really interesting historical fact. Josephus was a Jewish historian who wrote after the time of Christ, and he chronicled the history of his people. And Josephus is studied in all the major universities throughout the world. Josephus is seen as a legitimate ancient historian. And in the writings of Josephus, he tells this fascinating story of Alexander the Great. When Alexander had come and conquered Tyre, as Zechariah said that he would, he then made his way toward Jerusalem. Now, he had in advance notified the authorities in Jerusalem that he was coming, and he expected them to submit to him. But at this point, the Persians were, in effect, still ruling. Alexander hadn't conquered them completely at this point. But it was just, it was certain that he would. And so, but the high priest, who was the person in power at the time, he recommitted himself to the Persian king, and he brushed off the orders of Alexander. So when Alexander heard that, he was on a mission to go to Jerusalem and to slaughter as many people as he could. But as he's traveling to Jerusalem, the high priest has a change of heart. The high priest realizes that this is not good. We're going to be in trouble. So what he does is he has all of the people dress in white garments, and he has all the priests in their priestly garments, and he has his high priestly clothing on, and they set up a welcoming party for Alexander. And so when Alexander arrives in Jerusalem, he arrives to shouts of praise and to honor and all of these things there with the high priest to pronounce a blessing upon him. And here's an interesting thing. And Josephus records all of this, that the high priest took the prophecies of Daniel, where Daniel had spoken about this Grecian king who would conquer the Persian king. And he showed it to Alexander and assured him that this was a prophecy about himself, and he was guaranteed victory over the Persian king based on that. Now, that's just part of it. The other part of it is that Alexander had had a dream years and years before that he would meet a man who was dressed like the high priest, and that man would pronounce a blessing over him. And the blessing, what was implied in the blessing, was that he would rule. And because of all of that, Jerusalem was spared. The Jews were able to live in relative peace and prosperity throughout the reign of Alexander, which was brief, but then his generals, they became the rulers of that part of the world.
For the month of March, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled, Is Easter Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. We live in a world devoid of hope, but there are plenty of counterfeits masquerading as true hope, such as pleasure, comfort, or entertainment. But as the world chases the elusiveness of hope apart from the person of Jesus, Rebecca McLaughlin will help you wrestle with the reliability of the resurrection of Jesus before explaining why you should accept his offer of hope. Perhaps hope is something that you've been longing for. Have you ever sought after hope through endless pursuits that always seem to end in disappointment? Are you ready to stop pursuing after things that do not ultimately satisfy and finally discover what true hope really is? Well, in her book, Is Easter Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the Resurrection Story by Rebecca McLaughlin, she'll help you understand that hope is not just wishful thinking. She will help take a fresh look at the resurrection of Jesus to help you discover what true hope really is for yourself, and discover that the resurrection is really not unbelievable at all. Happy endings are not just a scam. The resurrection of Jesus can bring you true hope. So if you want to take a fresh look at the resurrection of Jesus and consider for yourself if it's reliable or not, we encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443 or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com. To order, Is Easter Unbelievable? 4 questions everyone should ask about the resurrection story by Rebecca McLaughlin. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you this book as our way to say thank you. We do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the book of Zechariah. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.